In this sermon, we're going to take a look at something that I think you'll find interesting. I don't know whether you've ever considered that as you look at the book of Genesis and look at what it says, especially in the first few chapters, and then you go to the book of Revelation, you find that there are certain parallels between the book of Genesis and the book of Revelation. And as you look at these parallels, they're quite encouraging, I think, because it shows that God is consistent from the Old Testament to the New. It's reassuring because God has a plan. And he laid out the plan at the beginning, and there's a culmination to the plan in the book of Revelation. Also, as you look at the Bible as a book, the Genesis is the beginning. But if you go to the end, Revelation is an ending, and a very fit ending, as I think you'll see. So let's begin in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In that verse with which we're all familiar, it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And as you look at the word heavens there, that's interesting because as you go through the Bible, you find that there are three heavens. We know that the first heaven is the area out immediately above the earth that goes up to the boundary of the atmosphere that surrounds the earth. The second area is the area beyond that we would know as outer space. The area of the sun, the moon, and the stars, and everything that's in our universe and galaxy, beyond our own realm. And then there's what's referred to as the third heaven, which is the location of God's throne. And as we look at all of this, we're not going to go through the whole creation account, but we are going to look at some particular things that we find there. And one of the things that you note as you look at unfolds in Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2 is God makes a place that is perfectly fit for human habitation. It is perfectly suited for human habitation. And everything that God is doing is all preparatory to the sixth day when God made the man and the woman. They are the pinnacle of his creation. And as you look at chapter 2, it gives you more information about man's creation and about the guidelines that God established for man and what he was to do and what he was not to do. And then in chapter 3, it shows how man responded to God's initial instructions, and it brings Satan into the picture. So God creates this perfect physical world, and what does God say at every stage? He says it was very good. He says it was good, and as he comes to a conclusion of it all, he said, it's very good. So as we see here that as man unfortunately brought sin into the world, it started polluting the earth spiritually and physically. And we get to the end of this present evil age, and we find the earth and its population on the brink of total destruction. So what does God need to do? In the beginning, he created the earth and made it fit for human beings. And in the end, he's going to recreate the earth one more time. What we find unfolding here beyond Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, is a recreation. And there will be, and that was a physical recreation. But what is ultimately going to play out is a spiritual recreation. And let's see where that's pointed to in the book of Revelation. Let's go to Revelation chapter 20 and look at verse 14. And verse 14 is speaking about the end of this present physical age. And so we've gone, at this point, we've gone through the millennium. We've gone through the great white throne judgment period. Satan has been released right after the millennium, and he is no longer going to influence the world. You have the great white throne judgment period that takes place, and then we come to this point after that period is complete. Verse 14 says, "Then death and Hades," that is death and the grave, "were cast into the lake of fire." This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So we see here the end of the age comes about, and we have the lake of fire. And the lake of fire, as it unfolds here, is not just in a particular spot on the earth, but it's going to engulf the whole earth. Anybody that is not found written in the book of life will end up in the lake of fire. You will cease to exist. And the only ones who will remain beyond the lake of fire will be God the Father and Jesus Christ, the righteous angels, and the saints, and those found written in the book. Now, before we continue on in the book of Revelation, if you'd turn back a few pages to 2 Peter 3, because the Apostle Peter talks about this particular situation. 2 Peter chapter 3, and let's begin in verse 10. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. Verse 10 says, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up." So the heavens and the earth will pass away. And so God created the earth and the firmament around it for a specific purpose, to support human life, lives that he would prepare for his family. That's what he's doing with all of us now. Then he's going to burn it all up, and he's going to purify it. And, you might rake up your leaves wherever you live, and you might burn up those leaves, or you might burn the rubbish that you accumulate, and basically you're burning it to get rid of it. But this is not just that kind of burning. It's more of a burning of purification. You're burning it to purify it so that what is left has no impurities, like burning the dross off of silver. So you try to get all the silver to its purest point, and you burn the dross off and get rid of it so that all that remains is what is pure. And that's what God is going to do with the earth. So the lake of fire burns up the dead leaves, in a sense. It is those who will not follow God, and it more importantly serves to purify the earth. In essence, what's happening is all of this burning is taking place is that Satan's fingerprints and footprints that have been all over the earth and over history are going to be removed. The sin, the human misdeeds will be burned up in the lake of fire. And those who are spirit beings will be there to witness the cleansing process taking place. Verse 11 says, "Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved," all these things are going to be burned up. Everything that we're familiar with in this physical world is going to be burned up. "What manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness?" You know, if you think about it, everything that is physical that we may put a lot of stock in is going to be gone. And as you look at some of the things we stew about and worry about and we're concerned about, and as you think about them in these terms, how significant are they? Sometimes we get pretty worked up over different things, and you know what? It's not going to matter in the long run. It matters in the here of now, in here and now, of course, but you know, we've got to take a long term view. And it's saying, look, if you realize this, what manner of persons ought we to be in holy conduct and godliness? And why does that matter? Because that's going to last. That will last forever. That's what's going to come through this time of purifying. Verse 12, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God. And, we look at the conditions of the world today, and it's certainly we certainly do need the return of Jesus Christ. And pray that that day would be hastened, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. So there are going to be new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. A world like we've never experienced. We glimpse it, but we've not been there and been part of it. And that's what God promises us here as he speaks through the Apostle Peter to tell us about what is to come. There are going to be new heavens and new earth. So we are in a physical world. It is a flawed physical world, and God ultimately, as His plan plays out and it comes to an end, is going to purify the earth, and there He's going to establish new heavens and a new earth. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 21 and look at 1 verse 1 as we complete this first point here. God creates the heavens and the earth is what He created physically, and He's going to create a new heavens and new earth, spiritually speaking. Revelation chapter 21, verse 1. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. New heavens and new earth, for the first heavens and the first earth had passed away. So God is going, it's going to be different than anything that we've experienced. And so we can look forward to that. So God is going to purify the earth. But you notice it says heavens back in what Peter said. So is God, you know, are Satan's fingerprints on the rest of the universe? I would say it's probable based upon his rebellion against God. And God is going to restore all of that. God is going to create new heavens and new earth, and it will all be cleansed and purified, and we'll have everything new. So God's going to recreate the earth and make it suitable for spirit beings as opposed to being suitable for human beings. So it's going to be a place that's perfectly suitable for human beings as we have the new heavens and new earth established. Now let's go to back to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, and let's look at verse 6. Genesis chapter 1, verse 6. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. So God, what He did is He recreated the earth here. He created this oxygenated atmosphere for humanity and other living things to live in. And He separated the waters. There are waters above in the clouds and in the atmosphere, and there are waters below, the rivers and the lakes and streams, and most importantly, the oceans. And as you look at what God is doing here, there's a tremendous amount of speculation about what is meant here. And we're not going to get into all those speculations, but it appears that before the flood, the earth was surrounded by this thick, relatively thick atmosphere of moisture. And that moisture protected the earth, especially from the, you know, allowed the sun's rays to penetrate enough to make it warm and pleasant for life, but it kept the UV rays and other rays that do us harm over the long term, kept those rays out. And it's thought that that's one of the main reasons why man had longevity. Because with man reaching the point of sinfulness to where God brought on the Noachian flood, what He did is He punctured that atmosphere around the earth, and that water, that rain fell to the earth and was never restored. And so we've been subject to all of those UVs and all of that kind of thing. At least that's one way of looking at it, and being subject to those, you know, people lived on and they had pretty long lives, but the sun was impacting them in a different way and they didn't live as long. And as time has gone along, we have our life spans of, if we get 67, we're doing pretty well. So God created the seas in Genesis chapter 1 as part of a habitation perfectly suited for humanity. And as you look at the oceans as an example, they're vital to controlling the atmosphere and controlling the temperature and purifying the air. The oceans play a great part in all of that. And so to no longer have an ocean that is fully functioning is a very serious thing. And that's, you know, as you see the end of the age, that's going to be one of the problems we face. So what does it tell us about the ocean back in Revelation 21? Let's go to Revelation 21 and look at verse 1. Revelation 21, verse 1. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. Now why is there no more sea? Because God is creating a habitation that's perfectly suited for spirit beings. Just as the earth was perfectly suited for us physically. And the oceans are very important to the survival of human life. So you need the oceans. And so they're important to all of us. But in the kingdom of God, when it's fully established and this, the new heavens and new earth have been established, you're not going to need a sea. Because there will be no human beings there. Only spirit beings will be there. It's not necessary anymore. So as you think about this, I kind of like the ocean. You know, I like the ocean. I like, you know, the sunsets and the sunrises and the sound of the waves and all of these positive things, you know, and that you can enjoy on the ocean. I enjoyed going to the beach and laying on the sun and shortening my life there, getting all those UVs. You know, you probably did that as well. But anyway, you may think, well, what's going to be better? What's going to be more beautiful than that? Well, I would refer you to 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9. You got to keep this in mind because, you know, we can't exactly figure out the way things are going to be in every facet of God's kingdom. We know it's going to be a kingdom of righteousness, and that right there by itself is the most significant thing because people are going to rightly treat one another. We're no longer going to have sin. We're no longer going to have all of the conflicts and horrible things that take place in this world. But it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, "But as it is written, eye has not seen, nor has ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love Him." So, you know, when you say, well, God, I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm not sure it's going to be all that good. God said, don't sweat it. You know, you're not you. Being limited physically, can't see it and hear it and fully understand it. But trust me, if the earth was perfect for human habitation, the spiritual kingdom that is coming will be perfect for spirit beings to dwell in. So it's going to be something truly wonderful. And so you say, well, there's no sea. Well, we'll say, well, obviously there must be something that's enjoyable there because look at God's the one who created the beautiful things, didn't He? So if He's able to do that with a physical world, He'll be able to do the same with a spirit world. So let's go to point number three, is God called the darkness night. God called the darkness night. So we've looked at the oceans. We've looked at God creating the heavens and the earth. And now we're looking at God called the darkness night. So that takes us back to Genesis chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. Genesis chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And then in verse 4, "And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness." So, as you look at light, scientists have been able to find out that light is made up of particles. Light is, there are light waves. They found that you can bend light. They found that you can shape light. For instance, a laser is a shaping of light to point it in a very concentrated way. And you can shape light. They've been able to figure that out. But to this day, it is difficult for scientists to define what darkness is. They define the darkness as an absence of light. which, you know, okay, there's no light, and then, you know, they'll also define light as the absence of darkness. So, anyway, that's those kind of definitions sometimes perplex me, but that's the best they can do. So God had a reason for making a portion of the day dark. And why do you think that was? Well, it's important for human beings to rest, and the dark time of darkness is a time for them to rest for optimal health. And we have to understand that darkness is not necessarily eternal in the way that light is. And God separated light from darkness, and He created this. You know, and really, when you think about it, that's a pretty significant thing for Him to create, to think it through and say, okay, darkness is going to work well for human beings. It's part of that human habitation that I'm creating. In a spiritual sense, He not only gave mankind day and night so he would sleep when it's dark, but God also uses light and darkness in order to teach us spiritual lessons. You know, God is a God of light. Satan is a being who brings darkness. He epitomizes darkness. We know that sin is tied to darkness. It's interesting, as Paul is speaking of the Gentiles who do not have a relationship with God and are just following the way that they feel and desire, and they're unfortunately don't see the seriousness of sin. Paul speaks of them in this way. He says their foolish hearts were darkened in Romans chapter 1, verse 21. So to move away from God and to move to sin is for your heart to become darkened, and that's what's happened with humanity. Every time the sun sets, we're to be reminded as human beings that in the absence of God's light, there is darkness and sin. John 3, verse 19 tells us that men apart from God love darkness more than light. They love darkness more than light. They were not willing to come into the light that God provided for them. It's interesting that when God refashions the earth to be suitable for spirit beings, one thing that will be missing is sin. Sin will be missing. And as a representation of that, another thing that is missing is night. There is no need for night. You no longer are going to have to teach that lesson to the spirit beings dwelling there. A good spiritual explanation for sin is night. Darkness wandering around, unable to see. You know, as you think about it, if you ever wandered around in the dark, what happens? You stub your toe, you fall over things. That's the way sin is. It's a great spiritual analogy that God has given us. So that spiritual analogy, is that going to be necessary in the time when God's family is established? No. Remember, sin and death and all of that ended in Romans chapter 20, verses 14 and 15. And the only beings that live beyond that are spirit beings. So let's go to Revelation chapter 22 and look at verse 5. Because in parallel to what it says in Genesis, God makes a point in Revelation chapter 22, verse 5. Here the Apostle John says, there shall be no night there. There will be no night. They need no lamp for light of the sun, for the Lord God gives them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. So God the Father gives off light. Jesus Christ gives off light. And since you will be a spirit being like God the Father and Jesus Christ, you will as well. There, you won't need a flashlight in the world tomorrow. There will be no darkness, but you won't need a flashlight, because wherever you go, you will bring light. You will be a light bringer. God is light. James chapter 1, verse 17 calls him the Father of lights, and he says there is no shadow of turning, no darkness whatsoever in God. And as spirit beings, there will be no shadow of turning in us either, nor will there be any darkness. And, you know, God has created a wonderful world, and he was, you know, it's the genius of God to come up with darkness. And the absence of light. But in the world that is to come, as it ultimately plays out, it will be a world where there is light. There will be no darkness there. So that's something to look forward to, a very different world than we live today. I don't know, you know, as I think about light, how important is it? You know, people living where it's all gray and cloudy and all of that, they get depressed. And I know always for me, I'll take a cold day that's sunny versus a cloudy day that's cold. That makes it worse. It's not only cloudy, but it's also cold. So I'll take a sunny, cold day anytime over that cloudy, cold day. I would prefer sunny, warm days, which we're moving toward and looking forward to that. But, you know, people do get depressed. It does have an effect on them. Let's go to point number 4, which is God made two great lights. Point number 4, God made two great lights. Let's go to Genesis chapter 1 and begin in verse 14. Genesis 1, verse 14. Genesis 1, verse 14. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, so you have the sun and the moon, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years." And one of those words there, signs, or I believe it is for signs and seasons, it has to ties in with the holy days. And God's intention was that man would be focused upon these days from the beginning as he worked out his plan. Verse 15, "And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth, and it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. God saw that it was good. So the evening and morning were the first day." So is that what we see here is that God set all of the sun and the moon and the planets and all of that in their particular rotations. And for us living upon the earth, the sun and moon are crucial. God placed the sun, at just the right point away from the earth in order to provide warmth for the earth and other benefits, but not to burn it up and not to be too far away in order that it would freeze. So he set it at just the right location, and God placed the moon in a particular spot that was going to have a positive effect upon the earth as well. So, and God set up the earth to rotate. It rotates on its axis that's crucial to sustaining life as well. So God created all of these things and placed them in order. And this is all part of creating a habitation that is perfectly suited for human beings. But what about as the new heavens and new earth are established? What's that going to be like? Let's go to Revelation 21 and look at verse 23. Revelation 21, verse 3. Revelation chapter 21, verse 3. 23. Yes, sorry about that. Pardon me. Verse 23. "The city had no need of the sun or of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God illuminated it. The Lamb is its light." So there was no need in this world for the sun. It's interesting, you know, as you look at the great false religions of the world, what part of heaven have they worshipped more than any other? The sun. They've worshipped the sun, and I mean, that was crucial, that was essential to Egyptian religion. Even if you look at the Catholic religion, you look at sometimes pictures of Jesus Christ, and you've got the sun back there, and he's tied in with the sun god. You know, Sunday is what? The day of the sun. So sun worship has been very much a part of many religions in the world, and yet in the world as it ultimately works out, there will be no sun. You know, all this time and effort that mankind has been involved in its worship was basically futile. And so God is, as things are unfold here at the end of the age, there will be no worship of that that planet because it will not be needed. And it will all be new. Same thing with the moon. As you look at Islam, you know, what is their symbol? It's the crescent moon. And it ties back to moon worship in Islam. So it's it. So God is going to do away with these things. They will no longer exist. And light will be provided by God, the Father, Jesus Christ, and the saints. Verses 24 and 25. And the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. Its gates shall not be shut at all. There shall be no night there. No night. No sun. No moon. No night. So we have light necessary on the physical planet for our health, but also necessary to be a spiritual picture of righteousness as opposed to sin. In the world tomorrow, in the New Jerusalem, we won't need the sun and the moon in the same way. Those things will be burnt up, as Peter pointed out. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 1. Look at something interesting here about spirit beings. Revelation chapter 1, verse 12. Now this is speaking in the previous verse 11. It is Christ who is speaking and telling them that He is the Alpha and the Omega. He's writing. He's wanting John to write down what he sees and what is inspired here for the seven churches. Then in verse 12 he says, Then I turned to see the voice that spoke with me, and having turned, I saw seven golden lampstands. And in the midst of the seven lampstands, one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the feet, and girded about the chest with a golden band. And his head and hair were white like snow, and white as snow, and his eyes like a flame of fire. His feet were like fine brass, as if refined in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. He had in his right hand seven stars, and out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and his countenance was like the sun, shining in its strength. That's the way the Father is. That's the way Jesus Christ is, and the way we will be as sons of God. It's interesting as you look at the verses here, and it's describing Jesus Christ. It's describing, John is describing what he saw. All right, and you know, it's interesting that as we went through the situation back in the 90s, where they were trying to talk about spirit and matter and all of that kind of thing, and they were pointing out that spirit and matter are totally distinct; they're not alike at all. And basically, they pointed us to this idea of God being like a blob. You know, there is. You know, you can't define him. You can't do anything like that. But if you look at what it says here and you accept the Bible for what it's teaching you, and John is seeing this, okay? And he's describing what he saw. And he sees a spirit being there. And what he's pointing out is that matter and spirit, in appearance, look more similar than many believe, especially the Greeks. He points out that the Son of Man was clothed with a garment down to his feet. He's girded about the chest. He had a head. He had hair, and his hair was white like snow, and his eyes like a flame of fire. So he has all these features that we would recognize as human. His feet were like fine brass, as if refined in the furnace, and he had a voice that sounded like many waters. So he shines like the sun, but in appearance he looks like a human being. And so the scriptures here tell us the opposite of what man has concluded in his philosophizing. And this is a true picture of a spirit being. And you think about you know, we've talked about the layout of the tabernacle and the temple. Well, what were all of those pictures of? What were they types of? They were type of what was in heaven. So should we be surprised that God's Son looks like us? Because what were we created like? You know, as Genesis tells us, it says that we were created in His likeness and His image. So we're very similar. So God is not a spirit that hovers in a cloud like manifestations of some sort. He has a body. He sits on a throne. He travels back and forth. And He shines like the sun. So as you come to this new heaven and new earth, there will be no sun nor moon there, because the spirit beings will give off all the light that you need. Give off all the light that you need. So let's go on to the fifth point, which is death enters the world. Death enters the world. So let's go to Genesis chapter 2. Death enters the world. So in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, we'll pick up the story that's unfolding here. Then the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. So man was created, he was placed in the garden, and he had a job to tend and keep it. It's interesting that God gave him a job right from the beginning to tend and keep the garden. And, you know, it's an important point for us to always remember that we are at our best when we have a job to do. You know, when we vacation's good, but and you enjoy it and you recharge your batteries, but, you know, we all do better when we have something to do. You know, sitting around and laying around and not having anything to do is really boring. I think that's one of the blessings of coming into the church. I've not had a whole lot of time just to loll around and not have anything to do. And there's always been something to do, and that's a good thing for all of us. So he's told to dress and keep the garden. Verse 16, and the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat. So he's setting boundaries, and he told them that he can eat of every tree of the garden that bears fruit. But he says, there is one that you're not to eat of. In verse 17, but the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat it. For in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. So those were the instructions given. They're clear. Unfortunately, man sinned. Man sinned, and Eve was deceived by the serpent, and Adam succumbed to the serpent, and they both sinned, and so sin enters the world. And as a result of sin, what comes about? Eventually death. So all of this is introduced into the world. Death entered. Let's see what it tells us. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 21. Revelation chapter 21. So Satan influenced man, and man went along and followed him, and as a result of that sinned, and so we've had death to confront ever since. But that's not going to be forever, as chapter 21 verse 4 tells us. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death. No more death. Nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. So you're in the new heavens and the new earth, you're going to have a world where there is no death. We're not going to be having funerals anymore. And that is going to come, because there will be no more death, because there will be no more sin. So it's God creates a new heavens and new earth that's fit for spirit beings. The New Jerusalem, God's capital, comes down, and there will be no more death in that kingdom, as it ultimately unfolds after the time of the new heavens and the new earth. So we see that you know, Satan is, and Satan will be removed, which is another point. You see Satan in the garden there at the beginning, but in this kingdom of the time of the new heavens and new earth, he won't be anywhere around. But that's another point which we'll talk about at another time. The next point, the sixth point, is I will greatly multiply your sorrow. Let's go to Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3. So in Genesis chapter 3, God confronts the woman, and she basically says that Satan deceived her, and he's played a part in her sin, which is true, but she went along with him. And she knew better. She knew the answer to the question he asked, but unfortunately she didn't follow through on it. And so God brings a curse upon Satan, And then she goes on, verse 15, and speaks of the enmity between the woman and the serpent, and is speaking of prophetically of the coming of Jesus Christ. And then in verse 16, God said to the woman, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule you. And this is a curse. This is a curse. And what he says is that as a result of your sin, you're going to be, when you have children, your sorrow is going to be multiplied. In pain you shall bring forth children. And you have to infer from that obviously that was not God's intention from the beginning. God's intention was that you would have children and you would not have all of the pain and everything that goes along with it. And unfortunately, we don't, for women, that's a very painful thing to have a child, and all of you probably remember it. And, some women have one child and that pain was plenty for them and they're not having any more, and others go on and bear up under it, and you go through the pain and agony that is all the that goes on there before the child is born, and then we have a healthy child, and you're excited and positive about it, and over time you forget the pain. But so God brought this about as a result of sin, and why would God do that? Because God wants people to remember that sin brings pain. The reason that I'm going, if you're familiar with the Bible, you would be familiar with this verse. And the fact that bearing a child is painful would be something that you would remember. You know what? I'm going through this because of Mother Eve and what she did. And God cursed us in that particular way. So, and as you think about, as you have children, you have that little baby there, and they're so sweet and they're so innocent, but they don't stay that way. And sadly, having children is a painful thing. We always have to remind my children that my wife is always their mother. And if you have a mother and she's still living, she's always your mother. And so she sometimes treats you like your mother, and you're a little kid. But that's how it is. And sometimes there's a lot of pain in being a mother and of a child, and based upon some of the things that they do. As you look at God uses this analogy to teach us about what's ultimately going to play out with the birth of spirit beings, that it's going to be like a labor, and it is going to be hard, especially as you get to the end, as we get to the time of the tribulation and the day of the Lord and those kinds of things. It's going to be a very traumatic time, a painful time, but the fruit of it will be wonderful as the seventh trump sounds and Christ returns. So let's go to Revelation chapter 21 and see the parallel here. Revelation chapter 21. Revelation chapter 21, verse 3. Revelation 21, verse 3. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And you look at the pain that goes along with raising children and all of that, that's going to come to an end. And as you know, the children are faithful to the Father, and the Father is their God. Verse 4, And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death nor sorrow. No more death nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. It's interesting, as you look at those words, they're very similar to what God said in Genesis. And God is bringing all that to a culmination in a better world. So as you look at this, you see what's transpiring. It's all moving to something grand and glorious that God is going to work out. So the former things that are passing away and the childbirth will be something of this world, not the world to come. And let's look at the next curse that's here for our seventh and final point. Cursed is the ground. Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. So God has pronounced the curse upon Eve, and then he pronounces the curse upon Adam because he heeded his wife's voice and ate of the tree that God told him not to eat of. And he goes on to say in the curse, he said, Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. So, as you look at women's sin, it affected, caused the pain of childbirth. But man's sins brought a curse on the whole earth. And, why is that? That God would have to explain that, but that's what it appears to be. So instead of being able to go out into the garden and pick the fruit, and have all the fruit and vegetables you need, and you just pick them and you eat them, and it's abundant, it's prolific, that's not the case anymore. God said, as a result of your sin, now producing food is going to take a lot of effort, a lot of work. So man's history has been filled with striving to stay alive, striving to grow enough to eat, enough to put on the table. So most of the people who have lived on this earth have had to struggle just to stay alive, struggle just to put food on the table. In various parts of the world, that is still the case. Our grocery stores are still full. As long as we have the money to buy it, we're going to be okay. But in many parts of the world, it's pretty, they don't have a lot of variety. They don't, and some of the things that they eat we would find distasteful, but that's what they have to eat. So you eat what's available. So he tells them that he's going to work hard, and then he's going to return to the dust. So sin brought this curse. It is most interesting as you think about the world tomorrow. You think about some of the most vivid prophecies are in regard to the earth being producing abundant fruit. The desert blossoming like the rose. And you see the plowman being overtaken by the reapers and those kind of things. There's going to be so much abundance and things that we've not experienced now, because it's going to be a different world after the return of Jesus Christ. Let's go to Revelation chapter 22. Revelation chapter 22. And we see that the world to come is going to be very different. And we've spoken about the new heavens and the new earth, but as you look at this and you think about it, some of this has to refer to the millennial kingdom also, so some of what's said here in Revelation 22. It says in Revelation 22, verse 1, "And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb." And as the temple that is described in the book of Ezekiel is established, that you will have such a river flowing out from under God's Christ's throne. And it will bring healing, you know, physical healing, and most importantly, you know, as God's truth flows out from there, it will bring healing to all mankind. It says, "In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations." So I think there's, you know, some symbolism here, but I would also say that during the millennial kingdom, you'll probably have the tree of life available there, bearing the fruits, and the leaves will be for the healing of the nations. Well, when the new heavens and new earth are established, the nations don't need healing; they're already healed. So this has to be looking back to the millennial kingdom to a degree during that time of healing that will take place, and the fruits for healing will come from God. And you'll have fruits every month as opposed to a harvest in the fall and maybe a small harvest in the spring. You'll have production all year round. Verse 3, "And there shall be no more curse." There shall be no more curse. "But the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him." There shall be no more curse. So the curse imposed in Genesis chapter 3 is removed. And as that is removed, there will be great plenty, physically and most importantly, spiritually. So when you look at the parallels between Genesis and Revelation, they're quite encouraging. You see that God made this perfect, beautiful world for humans to live in. And he provided everything that was necessary for them to have a wonderful life here upon this earth. We see that all of that was messed up by what? By sin. And Satan has continued to influence man to sin, and ultimately Satan is leading man toward his self-destruction. But thankfully, God's going to stop that, and ultimately God is going to begin showing man what his way of life produces in the millennial kingdom, and then ultimately there will be new heavens and new earth. And all those things that we have known in this physical world will be gone. And what will be created is a world that is perfectly suited for spiritual habitation. So I hope you find that encouraging. I thought it was encouraging to look at it and to consider what was said there as far as the parallels between Genesis and Exodus. And I think it beautifully illustrates how God is going to work everything out and bring everything to a wonderful conclusion.